Welcome to the Broski Doodles Podcast, the best podcast in all of the land. It's your boy Kiko Flow, Kiko Cervantes. And as always with me, Chef Maurice, one of the best chefs in the world, culinary expert, patents in many countries, but he's a humble guy, so I gotta give him the flowers. I gotta give him the props. How you doing, my boy?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. A lot of thinking about nothing.
So you're not thinking?
I'm not thinking.
Okay, so what the fuck?
You know what? My fucking neighbor. Now, I have questions because, as we all know, I've moved recently.
Right, you're in Miami?
In the 305. And I think in the Spanish podcast, we talked about the mango tree, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's leaning over the street and what's the... You should check it out.
Right. If you don't speak Spanish, it's still cool. You can put subtitles. Spanish podcast.
Those are AI generated.
On the link below. Yeah, of course. So yeah, I mean, just to put it into context, the mango tree dilemma is, you know, you have a mango, but what if that mango tree extends over the fence? Can you then take ownership of some of the mangoes that are within that, you know, perimeter? But anyways, onwards.
So now my next question was, my trash. Sorry.
It's okay.
I'm very excited to be here.
Oh, I love that.
My trash can is filled because, here in the city, the trash comes by twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
So last week we forgot to pull out the trash one of those days. So it's accumulating throughout the week. So my trash can is overflowing with trash. It should come by today. So right now it's waiting for it to be picked up. But the other day, I'm like, my trash can is full and I have a shitty diaper from my son.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just throw it in my neighbor's trash can?
Right.
Which he keeps right next to my door and his door. So like I can just throw it there. You know, mine is filled. He can hook it up for this time.
Right.
But this happened, I want to say, 4 or 5 days ago, where I did this, where I threw out my shitty diaper in my neighbor's trash can. So now that shitty diaper has been cooking in that fucking trash can that has a lid, and it's been 98 degrees outside Fahrenheit.
Mm. And just quickly, this trash can of the neighbor's is completely empty?
It was empty.
Completely empty.
At least it wasn't. Yeah, I could see the bottom. Yeah, it was. Mm. It was empty.
Oh shit! So yours was the only trash there.
We have separate trash cans.
Right. But
mine
what I'm saying
is the other side of the house.
No, but so what I'm saying is what you threw in there. What was the only thing inside that?
It probably
trash
can. So he knows if he looked in it. Well, now the dilemma comes where, all right. Now that shitty diaper is there, it's been sitting there for 4 days.
Oh.
So yesterday, there was a foul smell.
That you could feel just coming near it.
Yes, because it was constant to the house.
Right, because the trash cans are together, right?
They're not together, but he keeps it very close to the door of his house.
Mm. Oh, so you actually had to walk there.
No. I just had to open it with one hand and just
kind of saying it's not right next to yours. You have to sort of go there. No.
I'm going to have to send you a picture for this.
Okay.
But yeah.
I mean, I think you could just answer the question. Do you have to walk a distance to get to this place where this person holds it?
Or is
it
right next steps.
To you? Okay.
3 steps.
Okay. But it's still in their property, not in yours. Okay.
Correct. So my shit was overflowing. I had a shitty diaper. I threw it in the neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday it was a fucking smell. Like it raked.
Okay, and that you could smell from your side of the house.
Right. So I'm pretty sure you could smell it from his house.
Oh my God. Okay.
So what happens now is that the smell was bad that my wife thinks, she still thinks there's a dead animal somewhere because that's the kind of smell that it has. And I told her, I'm like, it has to be that shitty diaper that I dropped there a couple of days ago. She's like, that's not the smell of shit. That smell of dead.
Mm-hmm.
So we were, you know, she was debating where it was. She thought it was, it might be somewhere around the house, our house, mm-hmm. because it smells so big here. But I keep telling her it's not. So this morning,
God,
the neighbor took out the trash to the curb.
Wow. Okay.
So he took out his side, his bin. He took it out to the curb where the truck is going to pass hopefully any second now. And I took out my trash, which is overflowing, and it's in the fucking curb right now.
You moved it as well.
Right. And both smell like shit. Like it's the smell in mine is like horrible, but it's, I have bones there, like chicken bones.
Damn, they're being roasted in the Miami sun
for at
Jesus,
least a week,
bro.
Because we forgot to take out the trash one day.
So, okay, sorry, continue with the story because I'm very intrigued as to what happens next.
Well, we're in the way to seeing what happens next.
Okay, so up to now, the neighbor hasn't come to you and said shit.
No.
I'll be honest with you, that neighbor knows.
He knows. If he knows. Opened the trash can, the smell. Now
this is
like,
what happened, right?
Like, fucking diaper.
He knows he threw everything. Is this the neighbor that sometimes says hi?
Yes.
Okay, so he knows he threw away everything in his fucking trash. So he starts noticing a smell. He's like, wait, let me check the trash right away. I mean, did you put this like in a bag or was this like opened up like that?
That's where I failed.
God damn it. Chef Maurice. So that's you threw the diaper on his own.
That's where I failed as a person, as a human being.
Yeah, no, but this is bad because I'm thinking this child's, you know, poo-poo was strong enough to surpass a bag and still cause... you know, a biological hazard in the neighborhood. But no, it's because you threw that shit just raw, virgin. You're almost 40.
Bro.
Okay, so let me just say. So what I was saying is, he smells this. He looks in there, obviously, because, I mean, even if it wasn't a bag, he would still know it's you. I mean, I guess. But he wouldn't really be, he wouldn't be sure what it was. Although I would say if it was in a bag, tightly, you know, close, it wouldn't smell probably. It wouldn't smell that bad at all. So anyways, he looks at it. He knows it's yours because obviously he knows you have a kid. But I think he did the homie move. He's like, shit, I'm not going to tell him anything. I can tell even though I don't like him doing it. Because think about it. If this was the reverse, you would be like bothered by it. You're like, what the fuck? This motherfucker put his fucking shit in my trash. But he's like, look, that's his kid. He's overflowed on the trash because he's a retard and he didn't take it out on the other day of the week. So I understand why he put it here. But let me just put this shit on the curb because he's mad. So he's now waiting for you as well through the window, hoping this fucking thing passes by.
Bad neighbor move.
No, it's a great neighbor move.
No,
oh, no, yours
from my
is.
Part. From
yeah,
my
yeah,
part.
Yeah, yeah, you're fucking up there.
It's a shitty.
You should bring him like a Cuban croqueta or some shit. You know what would be funny?
If
you could film it, although, I mean, you know, or at least look at it and tell me. When the trash people come, it would be great to see their face when they open that motherfucker.
The cool thing about I don't know if it's cool, but the thing about the trash here is that they come and they don't even get out anymore.
Oh, you're right. It's like a machine.
They have the thing and then it's just... So right True. Now my shit is overflowing and hopefully they'll take everything.
Right.
It's not, there's nothing on the floor. So otherwise I would leave it there and I would understand.
They do?
I think so. I'm not 100%
sure. Shit.
I try to put all my shit in.
Yeah. I mean.
But also we're moving or finish moving. So we're throwing away shit that we find.
Right.
That,
I mean, if you're throwing away shit, you should just get everything. Damn, that's a very peculiar and interesting, neighborhood story, right? Because it's like, I bet many people have gone through similar shit like this. Like, if you, you know, live in a neighborhood, right, I guess, tell us what you think of this. Like, I just remember of a story. My cousin lives in one of these developments, like apartments. You remember when I used to live in this place called Villaggio? They're all named like that, by the way, which is like these three-story buildings with apartments, you know? That you go up that upstairs, but they're very nice, but they're small. So right outside your door, they normally put like this little box where you put your trash, right? I mean, I don't know. It depends on different places, but some of them have it like this. And my cousin had a neighbor in front of him that would leave a lot of trash. Like, he would just have a lot of trash and like sort of more than usual. So it was there was always trash there, and it always just smelled like vile. He was like, I don't know if he's like cutting out bodies like Jeffrey Dahmer in this bitch, but that shit just smelled vile. And it happened for months. He complained and everything, and it just kept happening. And eventually the community kicked him out. But it's one of those things that, yeah, like at the end of the day, you're living with other people. It's a community, and it affects you how those people behave. And in this case, it's important because at least, you know, Chef Maurice, he's a flawed man. He's not perfect. He's human. But he recognizes where that failure happened, and he expresses it here to all of you so that you can feel his vulnerability and maybe be open to your own fucking failures.
I think this person also forgot to take the trash out, because that, now that I think about it, it has been marinated for like 4 days. So I think he also forgot to take it out that day, which is fine. Oh. Maybe you don't have trash to take out.
What do you mean? I don't get it.
Why? Like the can, the bin. Maybe he's, yeah, but he also
you told me that
today.
It was empty aside from yours.
Right. So maybe he forgot to take it out. Maybe I put it the night before thinking that he would take out the bin and it would go away. What I'm saying is, like, maybe he didn't have to. Then
what up? But if you thought the bin was going to be taken by the trash people, yours would have been taken by the trash people too. So.
Right. But we forgot to put it out.
Right. But you forgot to put it out. So that the next day when you put it in his bucket, the trash man wasn't passing for the next 4 days anyway. So.
I mean, what I'm saying is that maybe I'm thinking that I did it the night before, since I saw it empty. I threw it there. Maybe he was going to take it. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe
when you say take it out, you mean put it in the curb so they can.
Right.
So,
right.
Okay. Right. And why wouldn't you just? Okay. And you didn't put it in yours because yours was overflown.
Overflown.
And you couldn't have put just a diaper extra. Maybe.
I mean, maybe if I pushed.
Right. And you thought, okay, I'll put it in his and he'll take it out. And then
I don't know what my thought was.
Right. No, but I mean, at least you're vulnerable enough and honest to tell people about it. If you have any experience like this in your neighborhood, you know, let us know. Like, not just with trash, but with other things, right? I mean, just community stuff that you know, you see neighbors, you say hi. Like, I'm at a time now where, like, I say hi to my neighbors, but some of them, I don't know. So some of them, like, don't reply. I mean, no, there's one that does. The other ones are a bit more. I mean, I can tell you my little story. I think the neighbors on the other side don't like me as much because we kind of have a little feud about the corner of my unit, so to speak, because mine is like towards the outside. It's not inside. It's not an apartment that's inside a building. It's rather the door goes to the outside. And my window, sort of the window that ends and then their door is there, there's a ledge of the window. And these pigeons live 4 stories up in a fucking nest that's sort of part of the building. And where they, when they shit, it lands on that fucking ledge.
So nobody cleans it?
It's sort of in the border, right? This is like the border of like Israel and Gaza. You know what I mean? It's that fucking conflictive. And one time, like, to be honest, even though it's technically in my property, like, it affects them. You know what right. I mean? Like, because that's almost like not even part of where I live, but it's technically my part. But it's also not my fault. Like, they should kill the fucking pigeons. Why are they fucking shedding here? So one time the lady came and talked to me, and she like very rudely said, oh, like, you never cleaned that? Or, you know, other people clean, you never clean? And I was like, what? And she would have came at me with like the right attitude. So I just kind of just like didn't even say much, just to sort of leave her there with words without replying. And then I just closed the door. And then with time, we started cleaning it every so often. And then they started cleaning it every so often. So now we have an unwritten sort of agreement that every once in a while, one of us cleans it. But this is like, you clean it, you leave it beautiful, and then the next day there's already bird shit.
But you know they sell stuff that you can put so the pigeons don't sit there.
Yeah, but this is the problem. They're not sitting there. They nest four stories up. Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
shit just drops.
Right, the shit just drops just there. Like, I mean, I don't know if it's legal to, like, kill them or do something. Like, but I don't know what to shoot it with. But, like, yeah, that nest, they should just kill it. But I don't know. Anyways, the fact of the matter is, this is just another example of these dynamics that happen in the world of, you know, having neighbors. You know, would I want to live in a time, hopefully in the future, where I don't have a neighbor because I just have I just live in a farm, motherfucker, a villa? I mean, I guess. But yeah, it's good when you have good neighbors, you know? And a good neighbor to me is one that's sort of in the middle. I don't want you to be too friendly with me. We're not friends. And I don't want you to be completely, you know.
But you don't want to make friends?
Nah, because I guess there's exceptions to all, right? But I feel like it's friends at work. I don't know. At work, yeah, you want to have friends, but are you going to have your best friends at work? Maybe not.
But this guy could be cool because, you know, he invites you over for drinks or guy's night out or invite the girlfriend situation.
You know what's the problem with that, though? We always watch these movies by Rod Paul and, you know, Judd Apatow or whatever, and they show you, oh, look, this is what happens. You get a neighbor. They're cool, and you start, you know, playing, you know, doing fantasy football and shit. What happens when that relationship breaks? I think there's a movie now with Judd Apatow and some other dude. It's like an A24 movie, but it's like a dark comedy where, like, I think this is what happens. Like, Judd Apatow makes friends with some other guy, but I don't know if it's in the same neighborhood. But anyways, and then they break ways. Like, Judd Apatow tells him, hey, dude, I mean, cool, you know, we had fun, but, you know, I don't like you like that. Like, what happens if your neighbor, for some reason, you're like, damn, this guy's weird. Like, I don't want to really be friends and shit. He's calling me all the time for beers. Oh, let's paint the fences. So that's why I don't think it's good to make too good of a friends.
Mm-hmm. But can you invite him over for dinner? Or is that too much?
I think that's a little too much. Ooh. You can talk to them like, oh, it's Halloween. We're all outside. The kids are, you know. Hey, what's up, boss?
But not Christmas dinner situation.
No, that's crazy.
That's too much. Yeah, maybe a Thanksgiving.
At Thanksgiving, maybe. Hey, you want to come over after eating and you want to have a couple of beers, John?
We can watch some football.
Hey, you want to come have some football, mate? They don't have Thanksgiving in the UK. Hello. You want to have some turkey?
They just moved to America. And then just
they just moved to America and they really embrace the American culture.
The culture, yeah.
Ha, oh, mate, we're having Thanksgiving for everybody.
And it was their people who basically...
Yeah, well, yeah, actually... Thanksgiving. Yeah, Thanksgiving happened because the indigenous people told the pilgrims, right?
Right, right.
Who were British people who didn't want to follow religion or they wanted, I don't know what the fuck they wanted to follow.
They wanted to do their own religion.
Yeah, they're like, no, we want to do our own thing. And I guess they didn't kill each other and the Indians were like, hey, let's have some turkey. They didn't have turkey, whatever they had at the time. So yeah, it's because of the British. So imagine a British Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving. All right, so look.
Can you do the British Indian accent?
British Indian. No, I can't do that one. I can do Indian, I can
do
British.
You can do Indian. You can maybe merge both of them.
Mate, I do not want to... I can't do it. I can't do it. Look, talking about British, let me tell you about this story that I came about in the internet. Let me just read sort of the synopsis of it, and then I want to discuss this a little further. Four British former Special Forces soldiers, including UK veterans, Minister Alastair Carnes, recently made headlines by summiting Mount Everest in under 5 days. A feat that typically requires weeks of acclimatization. Their rapid ascent was facilitated by a novel pre-acclimatization strategy involving xenon gas inhalation, a method previously unexplored in commercial ways. You know, like there's commercial hiking where you pay a company that takes you. Organized by Austrian mountaineer Lukas Furtenbach, the expedition combined xenon gas therapy with hypoxic training in Germany, allowing the climbers to bypass the traditional acclimatization period. They departed London on May 16 and reached Everest summit on May 21, returning home shortly thereafter. The approach not only reduced the time spent in the hazardous death zone above 8,000 meters, but also minimized environmental impact by decreasing waste accumulation on the top. That part I don't give a fuck. However, the use of xenon gas, which is what they use, has sparked controversy. While some view it as a groundbreaking advancement akin to the introduction of supplemental oxygen, others criticize it as a form of cheating or an unsafe shortcut. Nepalese authorities, it's in Nepal where the, you know, Mount Everest is, have initiated an investigation into the expedition, citing concerns over the unregulated use of performance-enhancing substances and potential risk to climbers who might attempt to replicate the feat without the proper training. Despite debate, the team emphasized that their ascent was challenging and not easily replicable. Their journey also aimed to raise over $1 million for veterans charities, highlighting a philanthropic dimension to their endeavor. So, sorry, speak.
Thank you for reading this for us.
Okay.
You could have just highlighted everything and put it on ChatGPT and put something like too long, didn't read.
Damn, that's fucked up. I thought you were actually appreciative of my fucking storytelling.
I appreciate it.
Too long?
A little bit.
All right. Is that what you were gonna say? Like, is that what you were interrupting me, or you had some fucking additions to the topic?
No. It was that.
Okay, completely empty. Perfect. This is great. You weren't taking notes. Nothing. All right. Well, I will speak because I find this to be very interesting. To put people into context, going up Everest is not something that you do in 5 days. It actually takes weeks because what happens is there's different camps at different heights. Camp one, you know, it's like sort of the lowest one. Then camp two is a little higher, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And what ends up happening is that you have to be in each of those camps for a few days so that your body acclimatizes to that pressure and air, oxygen concentration in the air, because as you go higher in altitude, there's less concentration of oxygen in the air that you breathe. That's why it's dangerous. So, as I've explained on my long-ass fucking recital here, is that, you know, the thing that they're doing now that's, you know, it's controversial but also revolutionary is using xenon gas. When they go up the mountains, they use oxygen cans, right, which is, they call it oxygen gas. You know, it's oxygen because when you're up there, you have less oxygen coming in your lungs and you get tired more easily, and things can go very dark if you start losing yourself, because they call it the death zone is the last part to get to the summit, which is close to 8,000 feet. And what happens there is that you're getting such little oxygen to the brain that not only your body is completely exhausted, your brain is also suffering sort of damage from this. And if you're there too long, you fucking die. And something that's very common that happens in that death zone is that even before dying, even still having the physical capabilities of getting down the mountain, people lose themselves and start having hallucinations and stay there longer, and that's why they die. This is why it's very important, like when Sherpas and different explorations are taking people up there, which is a commercial thing now that they do in the Everest, where anybody can pay to go up there. It's important to know when people have a limit there, because people want to continue. They're like, oh, I'm so close to the summit, I want to continue. But then the people that are taking them must be like, hey, no, I see that you're not going to make it. I don't want to take you there, because a lot of people die after reaching it because they just don't care. They're like, no, I'll continue. So I say all this to say this gas that they're taking, xenon gas, helps sort of, you know, compensate for all those things. And you don't have to acclimate as much, I would assume, because this gas gives you like extra oxygen, like just, I don't know, a better way of oxygen. Anyway, what do you think about this? If you have thoughts now or still empty?
So it's somewhat of like a performance enhancing drug.
Indeed.
Well, they could definitely be part of the, what was that we just talked about?
Enhanced games.
The hands games. This motherfucker's going to do it. 5 days. And then they'll compete until, you know, to make it shorter, make it in a day. I don't know, by time.
Right?
Or whatever.
I'm sure that's coming. Actually, this is very interesting. This could be part of the enhanced games. It has those type of of incentives.
But you can argue that this is performance enhancing, right?
Yeah,
the
definitely.
Xenon gas.
Yeah, it's not drugs, but it's substance. It's a performing enhancing substance. You know, it's funny because when you look at it in sports, you see how you would want to have sort of like divided categories, right? You have the normal leagues where you cannot take any performing enhancing substances. And then you have enhanced games, which we're excited about here in the Broski Doodles. And we hope maybe we can get some sort of sponsorship to help them, you know, catapult into the future of sports. But, you know, you want to have that division because obviously it's cheating if somebody is using these things in a sport that don't allow it, because then the rest are in a disadvantage, right? So we want to divide it. But Everest isn't like, you know, sorry, I thought somebody was knocking on my door. Everest is not a competition per se. It is something that people do to prove like a point that, like, oh, I made it, I did it all. But do you think, like, I feel like people feel it's cheating because then it undermines their own effort that they put to get there, you know? It's like, oh, you did it easier.
I mean, I think if you do it 5 days, 10 days, or a month, I think it's still an important feat to do. Because your body, our bodies are not, you know, made for that. We haven't pushed our bodies to that boundary. So whoever does it, and I don't think there's a lot of people who have actually done it, or maybe I'm wrong, but...
Well, these are the first four people.
Like in total, like without the enhancing in drug. Maybe it's not a lot of people. Thousands, maybe? I would have to look for it, but whatever it is, it's still a very good feat to just make it. And then just make it in 5 days. I think it's
probably even crazier. Give me 1 second. Jesus, it's like my neighbor. Talking about fucking neighbors.
Oh, the one that we were just talking about.
No, the other one that's right next in the wall behind me. They're like doing the vacuum. And it's just, they were knocking on the walls. Anyways, I thought some shit was happening.
7,000 people have summited Mount Everest. 7,269 people.
Yeah.
So it's it's still a low percentage.
Yeah, but you understand how it's not the same feat if it took you. I mean, because this is the thing. People could say, like, oh, if you did it faster, that means it's even better. But I think the complaint, I'll be honest with you. I think people complaining might be complaining because now they're going to lose money. The people that work there, if you're doing it in less time, then you're not going to pay me as much because you won't have to use all of the bases for such, you know. Now, granted, it's important to know these people that did this, they're on top shape, right? You have to be, because it still requires everything of you to get there. I just think what this sort of bypasses is the need to acclimate on each of the bases. There's like 5-6 bases, and each time you go a little higher and you go like, you know, 1 or 2 days in one, because your body needs to acclimate to that amount of oxygen going into your body. Otherwise, you get sick. So this gas makes it so that that's not needed, or it bypasses it, you know?
I'm trying to see how long does it usually last to go up in
right,
normal
right, that,
conditions.
That's actually a cool way. What's the average time it takes for somebody to climb Mount Everest? Because then we can really compare to the 5 days it took these people. Now, there's been all sorts of things that have made it easier for regular people to mount Everest, or to, you know, to, I think it's called to summit. Yeah, to summit Everest. In the past, you just went on your own. Now they have Sherpas that carry your stuff. You know what I mean? So is that cheating, right? Like, now they have commercial companies that charge you $100,000 to get you to summit Everest, and they provide everything.
Do you want to take a guess on how long it takes to go up?
Let me see. Let me risk it. Let's say with everything that's needed, let's say it takes 3 weeks, 21 days.
It takes between 6 to 10 weeks.
Shit.
So between, that puts into perspective
between
that doing it
10 and 6.
6 and 10 weeks.
Okay, so 6 weeks. Okay. So it's double what I thought.
So what, 10 months? I mean,
no.
Not 10.
6 weeks is a month and a half. So the lowest that somebody can do it in is a month and a half. And these people did it in 5 days.
And then
days.
You can do it in 2.5 months. Or, I don't know. Too much.
6 weeks? Oh, no, I'm fucking
6 weeks is a month and a half.
A month and a half, yeah. So that's the lowest time you can do it in normal conditions.
So 10 weeks, 2 months, and a couple of weeks.
2 months, yeah. 10 weeks would be 2 months and a half about.
Two months and a half.
Okay, but let's just go with a lower number, right? Like if everything goes perfect. That's still like a huge improvement. A month and a half, and these guys did it in 5 days?
Yeah, it's a big one.
That's
it's
crazy.
A big change.
I mean, I guess they just literally just climbed it without stopping because this gas allowed them to not even have to stop in between. You know, this is like when people go scuba diving and shit. Like, if you go deep, you have to go slowly down and slowly up so that your body acclimatizes to the pressure. In this case, it's not pressure. It's more oxygen concentration in the air. But, I mean, this is insane. Like, I would like to see what are, like, the medical consequences of this. I can see people being worried about people that don't have the physical abilities to get there but still think they can and use the xenon gas. And commercial companies starting to provide tours to the summit providing this gas. I mean, how, you know, it could get dangerous because, you know, what if this gas has other consequences, like other side effects?
The record for the deepest single breath dive is 253 meters. So about 830 feet.
That's like a total random fact, but I like it. Thanks for, you know, hooking it up.
No, because I wanted to put into perspective that how hard is it to deep dive compared to maybe going up Mount Everest. Mount Everest is going up there is 8,000 miles, 8,800 miles.
Right. I was saying 8,000 feet. I was fucked. Yeah, it's 8,000 miles.
And then the difference is that you're going to go 830 feet. Into the water.
830 feet is what, like 0.8 miles? No. A feet. Yeah, right? Something like that? I don't know. Fuck, we're fucking retarded.
We didn't go to school.
Yeah. We went, but we kind of just, you know, glanced it. Look, if you want to, you know, summit Everest, if you've ever, you know, done it, fucking let us know. What do you think about this? I have heard in the past there's been a lot of people dying because there's this expedition companies that are pretty much allowing anybody to go up there by paying. And in the past, there would be sort of a filter, you know, like obviously you need to pay somebody to help you get there, right? Because there's like you need some people that provide the tents and the guidance and everything. But they would still filter the customers. Like, if you want to come, you got to pay, but you got to be a mountaineer already. Like, you got to be a motherfucker that gets in the mountains like a goat. You seen those mountain goats? Like, you better be something like that. You better have already summited other smaller mountains, you know? But now, I mean, no, there's like a documentary that shows like people that have never even fucking climbed a mountain. They just paid and went, and some of them died. Because there's a good movie, actually. I think it's called Everest with Josh Brolin. Really good. You know, it's like Hollywood-esque. It's from the 2000s, but it's pretty good. It shows sort of what happens. It's a real story, too, of people that died. But that was a storm that happened. Anyways.
I remember hearing that while you go up, you can see bodies frozen.
Yeah.
That have passed in the quest of going all the way over there.
Yeah, and they're so high that you cannot. you cannot bring them down, bro. No, but that's true. Like, it's too costly and too dangerous to bring their bodies down, so they just stay up there. That's crazy, man.
Is that a good way to go?
I think so, because imagine the type of person you are that you summit Everest. Like, to you.
But if you pass halfway up, you didn't summit. Yeah,
but just being the type of person that attempts it, I would assume that you've already made peace with yourself that you might die. So, you know, you already know the consequences. It's like people that do, you know, they hike mountains, but, you know, climb them. Like, people, you know, die all the time.
Do you think that's something that you have to wait in when you're doing this? Like, it has to go through your mind at some point that you may die in this quest.
Of course. Summiting Everest is like a very dangerous thing to do. You could die like easily. I mean, it's very commercialized to the point where, like, I mean, the worst of the part is like the oxygen. So they can give you cans of oxygen, but it's very expensive to take cans of oxygen because they're heavy. So
the trash is passing right now. Oh no, I saw the trash.
Damn.
Sorry, I thought it was a trash. No, I saw the trash.
Man, your neighbor's gonna be so happy when that shit's taken. And
dude, it smells like a dead rat.
And
dead
raccoon, like, or something. The time that you don't put the trash out on time is the time that you have all this animal carcass that you have to throw away. Well, anyways, if you have any comments on this, we're on every platform. This is the Broski Doodles podcast. Chef Murray's on the other side, like always. And yeah, if you can leave a review on iTunes, Spotify really helps us. I wanted to get to another topic, but again, if you have any comments on this, on the Everest stuff, you know, let us know. I mean, any critiques. We're actually even more happy with the critiques. I was watching this new thing that's happening, right? It's like this rock band that launched a house party tour, apparently to protest pricey arena shows. And this is a band, I think, that you used to listen to, right?
The All American Rejects.
Is that a band that you listened to?
I did.
They're good?
I still do. They're good.
Yeah, so I saw like an interview of the main guy, the singer, I guess the leader. And he was explaining that, yeah, I mean, it just came to them through management and shit. Like, oh, we should do these events. And I didn't know this was part of it. I really thought it was like a marketing thing, because it blew up so much. But no, apparently it was because they're protesting. And this is something I really wanted to talk about. We've talked about it before, this monopoly that exists between Ticketmaster and Live Nation, where they own the ticketing services, you know, to process tickets, and they own all of the venues, or the main venues. So this makes it so that artists have to do everything through them, and as such, be victim of their high cost to you and to the people that are going, the attendees, right? You don't want your fans paying more than they have to. So what they did is they started doing these shows in like houses, you know, like house parties. And I heard they even like called the police on some of them. But what they've been able to do is like in middle America, they a guy tells them, look, you can use my barn. And they've done it that way and be able to get bigger shows where nobody really bothers. And I also heard this guy, you know, this guy that does, is this like bearded country guy that did a very famous song, "The Rich Man North of Richmond." He's like this country dude that did a song that blew up, and he just like recorded it on his barn, and then he blew up and became like, you know, big. But he kept it independent, so he doesn't have to, you know, listen to no label, no shit like that. And he's starting like, oh, I want to start a route of venues around America where people, like, they're not linked to Live Nation and Ticketmaster. And this way we can sort of evade them. And you know, I've been looking into this for a while because I really hate it, like, you know, that they own everything. Did you see this thing when, like, when you go to concerts, haven't you noticed, like, they own everything. Like, every concert is Live Nation, Ticketmaster.
Yeah, I recently purchased some tickets. It's crazy how expensive it is. And then they make it very hard to get because I feel like they buy and then resell for higher. I mean, that's also a lot of the critique that goes into it. To go see Shakira at the stadium here, it's like $900, the cheapest one on resale.
Hmm.
And then once they go into, you know, the period where you can buy it, it's like once you go in, that it lets you in because you have to do a queue, a line.
Right.
And then it shows you like, oh, you're person 4,000. I remember like for Bad Bunny, it was like, oh, you're person 50,000.
Hmm.
So it was very hard to get. Anyways, you're making this line, and then at the end, once you can get to choose, there's not a lot of tickets left. And they already, some that are on resale. Like, as you get in, there's already some that are already being resold.
Fuck. And you think that you think it might even be not even real people, but even Ticketmaster reselling their own shit?
I mean, it could be, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you can see how when they control everything, they have like the mafia on it. They can do whatever the fuck they want. It's crazy. I mean, I'll be honest. Like, I had a friend. Like, my sister went to the Ed Sheeran concert here in Madrid recently, and she bought the tickets from a friend of ours. And apparently, the friend had to go to the concert herself and show the tickets through her app. Because it wasn't like something you could transfer. And I'm pretty sure that was Ticketmaster. And you know, just to give them some credit and not just throw shade on them, but like, you know, to be fair, I do see the advantages that you can have by you controlling everything. Because, you know, in that case, now, at least with the ticketing, you can avoid scalpers, you know? But like, okay, you buy the tickets, you have to use your app. This way, I mean, people cannot sell it, right? Because how the fuck are you going to sell it? You have to go to the thing and like show them. And that's not how scalpers work. But then for the other shit, I think they're fucking like fucking up the customers. They're fucking up the artists. And I can understand why this the American rejects rejected this norm of, you know. I mean, you are fucked when it comes to the larger venues, because like larger venues, it's just them. But, you know, in the smaller scenes, like, you know, 300, 500, 1,000 people, you know, you still have some independent clubs. But what ends up happening is that these companies, Ticketmaster and Live Nation, they also go after smaller venues. And they tell them, look, you can come with us and we guarantee you payment every month. And we'll sort out all the artists and shit. Or, you know, you can go your own way and we'll look at you funny and, you know, we'll keep tabs on you.
I don't know we kept tabs.
So, yeah, I think it's great. I think we should sort of have more and more of this independent movement of PayPal.
No, they also see that their earnings might not be as much as with Ticketmaster.
The band?
Their earnings, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing house parties, right?
Right, they're probably going to go cheaper, let's say $20. You're definitely not going to make as much as selling an arena through Ticketmaster. Now, granted, in Ticketmaster, you're going to get a percentage taken off, plus you still have to pay taxes, and then all your employees, all the tech people.
I mean, I see how for smaller artists and bands, this is actually beneficial because, you know, you're already just doing 300, 400, 500 seaters. So you can just go to the smaller venues, get all the money directly, and you don't have to go through these big companies. The problem is when you're like at a high, like, you know, you're, I don't know, maybe the American Rejects, they could fill up a big theater of 3,000 people, but instead they're going to do a barn of 500, and that's not going to bring the same amount of money, but maybe they're doing it for the love, you know, for the kiddos.
For the love of the game. Well, also that way, you know, you're not paying the percentage that goes to Ticketmaster, so more money stays with you, if you think about it, you know.
Yeah, and I think that the people that listen to you, they prefer that. They're like, look, we want all the money I pay to go to you, to support right. The artist.
Yeah, going to concerts now, it's so expensive.
What concert did you buy to go recently?
I went to see Kings of Leon. I think that's the last concert I saw.
But in Miami? Year.
No, not in Miami.
No, but you just said, oh, I recently was in
Ticketmaster. Oh, that was recent.
Oh, okay.
Like last year.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a hassle. Also, like the tickets for the Club World Cup that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently they're not selling, but when you go to the website, there's a lot of demand for it. So they're super expensive. And also depends on the match. So
but wait, I heard, I mean, maybe this is fake, but I saw a bunch of social media posts saying, oh, because of low demand. Failure. Yeah, right. Like they're lowering tickets to even like $60. Is that bullshit?
That is true. But once they do that, I guess some people are showing up. I've seen a lot of the games that have happened already. Only one of them looked
empty.
What
do you mean? You've seen one of the games. The World Cup hasn't happened. It's next year.
The Club World Cup. They have a World Cup going on now for the clubs.
Oh, in Miami.
Well, in the United States.
Oh, I wasn't aware. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the World Cup that's going to take place in the U.S. next year.
Next year, right. Now, so this is like a preview for that.
Okay.
They wanted to do here, so it's like a little preview for what's coming next year, so they can test out certain stadiums and certain things.
And you were searching for tickets to go to those?
To go to a game, any game. I didn't care, but some are $67, and then others are $240. So it depends on the demand. There's a lot of tickets available, but I think from what I've seen on the TV, a lot of the stadiums have filled. Maybe not top capacity, but 80,000, 60,000.
Right, and is the stadium the Miami FC?
No, they're playing in the Dolphin Stadium.
Okay, it's bigger. Okay, and did you get a game ticket or you didn't find?
I didn't. No, I was just looking to see if I could buy some.
Look, I wanted to ask you something. How are you on the Mickey D's stuff, the McDonald's? Are you a fan? What's up with you?
I used to be a fan. I'll be honest, I haven't had Mickey D's in a while.
Okay, so you're not a
fan. I would rather go other places.
Okay. It's more like a thing you did when you were a child to you now. I would assume someone of your caliber of culinary dexterity, you know, wouldn't be down with the Mickey D's quality. I sometimes, you know, take pride in having a little cheap meal there. And here they have good prices when you use the app. Anyways, this is not a commercial ad. You know, have you heard this in the past? That McDonald's is not a food business, a burger business, but it's actually a real estate business.
How so? I haven't heard this.
You've never heard this?
I've never heard this.
Okay, so when you go to a McDonald's, right? The person that owns the McDonald's is a franchisee, right? It's a person that purchased the franchise from the McDonald's corporation. And one of the requirements is that the real estate where they're at, where they're located, selected by McDonald's because they do studies on which places work. You don't own that place. You're not able to own it, even if you wanted to as an owner of one of the McDonald's franchises. you have to rent it from McDonald's, right? So McDonald's buys the land, then constructs the McDonald's, which you pay as an owner, right? You pay for that construction, and then you pay for the rental of that place forever, right? So this is their business model. So they have a separate company that handles the rentals. So all of the McDonald's locations, those owners pay, aside from paying a royalty as well for, you know, using the McDonald's business, they pay rent for that location, right? So that's pretty interesting, right? Like that they have that business model. So it has been said, and you could see, if you haven't seen it, The Founder shows the movie. It's amazing. It's really good. And it explains exactly what I'm talking about. The guy that did it was visionary in the sense, and he thought about this from the get-go. So that's how they've always worked. I think only the first or second are actually owned by the owners, and then everything else is, you know, it's done this way. And so people have said, you know, like one of these like TikTok or social media interesting facts. Did you know the McDonald's is not actually a burger business, but actually a real estate business? And then they explain what I've explained to you, right? But I've thought about this a lot. And to me, they are still a food business first, because the only reason these owners are renting the location is because McDonald's provides the corporate and service structure, aside from all the products and stuff that have been proven, that already have a place in the market, a niche, and they provide everything for that location to work, right? Like, that location wouldn't have value and you wouldn't want to rent it unless you had this huge, you know, McDonald's enterprise providing you this place that makes money automatically, like a machine, because everybody already knows McDonald's and goes there. And so you know what I'm saying? Like, to me, if they weren't successful in their food, right? I mean, and their success comes from being cheap, practical, fast. You know, they're not like huge on like being the best quality stuff. But I mean, I think it's savory and it's good enough and it's cheap, right? And they make it quick and they have a system. So if that wasn't in place, then the real estate wouldn't be worth shit. People wouldn't want to rent it there, or at least not to the same extent that they do now with the McDonald's being there.
Well, also, so, if you think about it, if McDonald's did a study on where this store or location would make money, then you kind of have to trust them, right? They have been successful for so long. You got to have to go with their gut here.
Yeah, facts. I agree.
Facts. First no McDonald's. First McDonald's, San Bernardino, California. Hmm. All right. Trash is passing, guys. Trash is coming and going.
And you see it like taking the things?
Yeah.
Oh, you should have filmed that. He's saying hi to you?
No.
No, you don't want them to know that shit's yours.
No, fuck no.
So, I mean, do you think I'm correct with my analysis in saying that no, it is not a real estate business? It does have a real estate business within, but the main business is a burger and food business.
You can just see it as different business within the business. So
right, that is true, but I believe that the food one is the one that's more valuable. Without that, you don't have any of the rest.
Right. You the first thing you think about McDonald's is food. You don't think about locations or real estate.
Right.
I would believe that food is their number one reason why you're not gonna go to a McDonald's for like with a realtor to see what the fuck is going on there. Even though they've changed a lot. Have you noticed that McDonald's have a different color scheme now?
Oh no, I haven't.
It's like a darker in the darker
like gray
colors, grayish.
Yeah. I've seen memes about it where they say McDonald's have gone corporate. If you can in the meantime, if you can check for an before an after image of McDonald's. So yeah, with McDonald's, again, even though they have this business within the business, I still think the main business is selling burgers and making this food that people like, and the probably clogs our arteries, you know. I love it. I mean, every, you know, when I get it, I love it. It's like one of my cheat meals. It's very, I mean, again, it's because that's what we have here. McDonald's in Spain is really good. It's much better than the U.S. McDonald's, ironically. McDonald's in the U.S. has gone down dramatically, as everything in the fast food industry, aside from Chick-fil-A, not a sponsor.
Maybe but soon to be.
If I had the early 2000s Wendy's, that would be my thing. I mean, you haven't gone in forever, but I bet Wendy's isn't what it used to be. Okay, so can you open that picture?
I'm trying.
You know what you could do? Click on it. Then click it. Save image as. Okay, and put it like in your desktop. And then open it from your desktop. Although you're probably going to have to stop sharing. And then once you open the picture, it will allow you to share. Oh, okay. Open it big.
Big, big.
I mean, this is like old school McDonald's though, but yeah. It's not the one that we saw.
80s. Yeah, this is like 80s United States.
But I mean, you could see it. It was a lot more playful. And I mean, this shit looks like, you know, your worst nightmare on shrooms. But, you know. But yeah, I mean, you can tell it's a lot more corporate now. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think McDonald's is it's a great corporation. They know how to do what they do, right? And I think they do it right. And the one in Spain, I think they manage it a bit differently in Spain. I'm not sure if they have the same system as in the U.S., what we've been talking about, the whole real estate thing. I don't know if here is a corporation and they own everything and they just do it all themselves. I don't know. But it might be different in different countries because different countries have different requirements. So McDonald's has to adapt to them. Like McDonald's in Russia, you know, they have different sort of agreements, let's just say. It's a little different in Russia. So, yeah, I wanted to talk about that. I thought it was pretty cool. And I also had another topic I wanted to speak to you about. You've heard of Woodstock, right? Like the original one, like Woodstock 69.
I've heard. I've seen.
And you always, you know, when you see the clips and shit, if you could find a picture of Woodstock 69 so we can show people. What you think about is like, look, that was party. It was acid. It was fun. It was magical. It was hippie time. We saw all these great bands. It was amazing. What many amazing. People don't know is that, you know, this wasn't just all roses and happy times. This was an event that was scheduled for 50,000 people, and 400,000 people went. It rained. It got muddy. There wasn't enough food and drinks for people. It was chaotic. Like, people were trapped in this place that wasn't even, you know, sort of designed for it. It was like this big old farm and shit. And I feel like, yeah, look at this, man. If you look at the videos, it's crazy, man. Like, and thank God, you know, there were, I mean, things happened here, but thank God it wasn't like a bunch of dead people and shit. Cause this is like, there wasn't enough staff to cover this, you know? And it's only just one stage. It's a little stage too.
Right. It's crazy how there's like tents in the middle of the crowd.
And I think this was like on the first day when shit was still like happy. I mean, because I saw a documentary on this and you could also see like the struggle that people were having of being in this place. I mean, you see the struggle with people that go to Coachella and this shit is well organized and all. And people still go through harsh times, the sun, like lines to take a shower, aside from it being super expensive, right? So imagine in 1969, a lot less organization, a lot less, you know, like infrastructure for bathrooms, sinks. Like it had to be shit, you know? I mean, I have to go to a festival in less than a month here in Madrid, and I'm already dreading it. Like, I'm sure once I'm there, I'm going to have fun. But like, I'm already thinking the route to go back home because at certain times the public transport closes, and then there's like a huge line to get a taxi. No, it's not. It's not like a the festival is 2 days, but it's not a camping type of deal. And I'm just going the first day, which actually, now that I think about it, maybe the first day has less people than the second. Hopefully, I don't know.
Is it like a Friday or a Saturday?
Yeah, it's Friday, Saturday, and I'm going Friday.
Oh, you should be good.
I'm gonna see that people might care about, you know, the non, you know, Latin people. I'm gonna see what are they called? Fuck. Anyway, it'll come to me. Cypress Hills. So it's pretty cool.
Pretty good.
And then other people that are, you know, sort of different. But yeah, I'm already dreading it. Like, is there going to be enough bathrooms? Is there going to be a line to buy a beer? How packed are we going to be? You know, all that.
So at what time do you have to leave so you make it to the train?
So I would have to leave about 12:30 in the evening.
Will you be able to finish seeing the main act?
Yeah, well, if you call the main act the last act... But really, in this festival, it's not really organized like that, you know? So the people I want to watch, pretty much I'll be able to watch by 12:30. Like, the last one sings from 11:30 to 12:30, and then we can leave. There's another one that comes, like, at 1:30, but it's not, like, that important, and I prefer to not see them and then leave early to catch the metro. Because otherwise, there's not, like, buses, there's nothing. You have to fucking, like, get a taxi for $80 and make a line and shit. So I'm already hating that part. And also, we're getting there like at 6. So
yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah, I mean, like,
six hours is enough.
Yeah, 6 hours. You know, I'm almost 40. Like, that's enough. You know, I gotta go home, hydrate, you know, put cream on my face. And it's gonna be in the summer, July. So it's gonna be fucking hot as hell. So anyways, I'm already dreading it. I'm not a festival guy. I'm going for a friend, Luis. You know, if you're listening, you know, fuck you.
If you're watching this.
It's because his birthday. He wanted to go to a festival. Gay. We could have just gone to like a nice restaurant, have a cup of wine.
Well, it's Pride Month. Are you guys going to go to that festival?
I haven't even heard about Pride Festival here in Madrid. It's weird because like that's huge here. That's where I met my ex-boyfriend. Different times. So yeah, festivals, I always feel like they look at the... I'm a hater for festivals. They look at the great size of it, but then there's a lot of annoyances, you know? Like, there's a lot of limitations, complications. Although I've had, you know, great experiences in festivals, you know? Like, one of my first festivals I went to was Warped Tour. And I saw, like, Linkin Park, you know, when they were all
there.
They
revived it. They brought it back.
Oh, I thought you were talking about fucking the singer.
Chester.
He's like, yeah, bro, he came back. They stitched him up like Frankenstein.
They revived the Warped Tour.
Oh,
they're
nice.
Going out this summer. I think they already had their first...
So when I went, it was in West Palm Beach. And yeah, I saw all types of bands, like My Chemical Romance, Taking Back Sunday, Seosin. It was like, but I was young. And I think when you're young, it's cool, I'll cut that. When you're young, I just feel you can tolerate a lot more discomfort. You know what I mean? Like, I remember being young in Venezuela, like, you know, 21, 22, and going to the beach and just fucking sleeping in a hammock.
Those were good times.
And like now I'm like, oh, we're going to go to the beach and I'm going to sleep on a hammock? Hells no. So, you know, it's different times, different situations.
Because maybe before we could put up with it.
Yeah, now I need like comfort. You know what I mean? Like camping? Who the fuck is camping? I'm not camping. Are you camping?
I had to try it once.
I mean, you're going to have to camp with your kid type shit. I mean, I'll do it when I have to, right? Like, if you have a kid, you have to take him camping, you know?
But it's not like a, let's do it this weekend kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't do it with, like, my homies. I did it here when I was younger. We stayed in a tent and shit, got drunk. But I don't want to do that now. You know? Like I said, I'm not with my ex-boyfriend anymore. I don't do that.
I think I would have to try it once. I would hate it.
Okay.
But also, maybe we do a campfire. Somebody brings out the guitar, the s'mores.
I can see you, like, annoyed when it comes time to cook and just being limited in the utensils that you're using.
But I make it happen.
Like, Chef Maurice, when he came to visit me, I mean, granted, Spain, everything's small, too. So that's, you know, it's not my fault specifically. But you could tell Chef Maurice wasn't in his zone, right, when he was cooking, because he's like, I don't have my utensils. And I live in a house where we have, you know, sort of stuff. But then you go to camping and you have, like, a spoon, a knife, and a little pot. Where you make coffee and pasta.
I would bring all my shit.
You can't though. What the fuck? You're gonna need like a whole trailer for
my,
that. I'll
bring my cast iron skillets.
Yeah, maybe, but sometimes you gotta cook. You gotta cook on slack.
That I do this, maybe I'll do the extra job of like taking all my shit.
No, but I mean, we could at least do it. Like, you could take a version that's more light.
Right.
And then we need to get like stoves that are bigger so we can use larger. I mean, we'll do it right. I'm just kidding. We'll do it right. We make sure we do the carbonara. We make sure that we do the lasagna. We do the things.
Just make sure you bring enough bug spray.
Bug spray. Oh, that's another thing.
That's the one thing I dread.
Right. Is there camping that doesn't involve like bugs, or is that just an utopia?
No, I think it's utopia. Right?
Yeah. I mean, in Venezuela, it's very known for the mosquitoes, right? And they're huge.
Yeah.
Fucking huge. The best. Some of the best mosquitoes. Truly the best. So, yeah, I mean, we weren't even, like, trying to link this up. But, yeah, camping and festivals, they actually go together. Because sometimes the festival involves camping. And to me, that's like the combination of evil and worse. Like, the two things I hate the most, camping and festivals, combined in one. Like, imagine going through a festival, right? You're fucked at the end, like, you're tired, you sunburned, you just want to rest. And you know what you get? A fucking tent where the guy next to you is fucking and the other guy is on shrooms screaming. And you can still listen to the... Because at the night, they put the hard techno.
That reminds me of the video you showed me of the guy who did shrooms and went to Disney.
Oh, shit.
Sounds like a fun idea.
And he fucking went out the ride in the around the world thingy. What was it called, that ride? That's the one, right?
The Small World.
Small World. I mean, you were telling me earlier that you're not really into like roller coasters. I was telling you about going to SeaWorld and the roller coaster. You're like, no, I'm afraid of that. And you said, oh, it's a waste for me to go to Disney because I don't ride these things. But that park is pretty much all kid stuff. Magic Kingdom, is it?
I think so. I haven't been to Disney in a while.
We should. But I guess your kid is not old enough yet, right? To like really enjoy it.
We have family members that want to go to Disney. Mm.
Well, I mean, you'll have fun anyways. You see me how I try to like fit in anyway. I'm like, yeah, you shouldn't take them, and then you're like, no, but they want to go. Oh, well, I guess you should take them. It's fine. No, I mean, it is true.
Maybe if I do the Epcot around the world drinking, maybe I can stay, you know.
That's great, but I hear it's like expensive drinks, but I guess you go to Disney to, you know, to give the mouse the money, right?
You already know it's going to be expensive. Yeah,
but I'm at least, you know, be drunk while you're doing it. One thing they have at Disney that they're very strict about, and this is in every park, you know, in that area. Man, they ID you for a drink like they're the fucking FBI. Like, you see me with my beard, I look fucking destroyed. You know I'm close to 40. And they're like, let me ID you. And it's like this whole thing about like, oh, no liability. And you cannot buy a beer more than one because then I need to have the other guy here with their ID. It's like, dude, what the hell? What is happening here? Is there underage drinking epidemic here in Disney? What the fuck?
I can see that happening.
No,
I'm very shrinking this thing. We did this.
Yeah, but not that way. You know, as an underage kid, you don't ask a random dude, hey, can you get me a beer from the fucking convenience store? No, I brought a little flask with Jägermeister. Jägermeister. Hey, look, real quick though. So you're at Disney, right? Around the world. But no, you do like this guy, the shrew meniscus. That's a little dangerous with a kid. This is bad for YouTube. No, I know you're not suggesting that, but it would be fun. If you can handle it, you go to Magic Kingdom, you'll trip your balls out.
Well, maybe you do a small dosage. You don't have to be tripping all the way.
Right, like a microdose.
Microdose.
True.
You just go micro and have fun.
Yeah.
Maybe that's maybe I'll do that next time.
I'll be honest with you. I have sometimes, it bothers me in these parks because, you can drink, but drinking is expensive. But anyways, I'll pay it. But sometimes I don't want to I like drinking, right? But I don't know if it's always best for me when I'm drinking and doing activities in the park because then I get a headache. I mean, I know this sounds very boomer. I'm sorry. This sounds bad. But you get what I'm saying? If they would allow me to take, the Penn Boone, the Penn St. Boone, the Benjamin Franklin, I feel like I could do that the whole day, have fun chilling. But instead, the only thing that's available to me is alcohol. And I don't know if I want to be drinking the whole day when I have to be running up and down and shit.
Mm.
Although, I'm complaining too much, right? I mean, it's fun too. Would you, do you prefer it to not drinking at all? You prefer to be taking a few in a way?
Benjamins?
No, I mean the drinks.
I can take a few. But definitely not hammered. Definitely not gone. I don't know, but I don't know. I was told that maybe when we do go to Epcot, we do this drinking around the world situation.
Oh, you must do it. I mean, I haven't done it. It's super expensive, but you must do it because one, it's an experience that I hear is cool.
Do you think you make it out of Mexico?
I think Mexico is one of the first ones, so yeah.
I don't know how it is. How many countries are there?
Oh, it's a lot. You've been?
I haven't been in ages.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know how it is now. I haven't been in 15 years or more. So Epcot used to be one of my favorite ones because they had a couple rides there that I really liked.
Oh, it's the same 11 countries.
Oh, it's 11. That's the only 11. I think it's the countries in the UN. Okay. So now if your family decides you're going to Disney with the, with the relatives, then you're going.
Definitely with Benjamin.
Okay.
More than the question.
At this age, does your kid have to pay?
My kid has, I think, yes, has to pay.
Fuck.
I think 3 years or so.
It's like
two or 3 years is a cutoff.
I remember back in the day, this is Disney old school, early 2000s. It wasn't like the little kid had to show his ID, right? So my sister went in free until she was 8. We would just put her in the stroller. And you know what my dad used to do too? This is going to be crazy. This is he would give my little sister, right? Like a water container, like a Contigo, whatever, what's it called? Like a jetty, A Stanley. And he would fill it up with Venezuelan rum. Anyways.
All the way to the rim.
And he did what he called his own around the world. Yeah, that's when he would hit us. Anyways, look, so, yeah, you're going to have to do it. Disney, spend the money, do the thing. Just do the thing.
So you pay the same fee for the same, the same fee for every park, from what I understand, right?
Yeah, if you go one day, but, you're probably going to have to buy a pack for 2 or 3 days because that's how they make it so that it's cheaper, so that you have to go 3 days to the fucking thing.
Well, here you have 3 days. You have three parks for $89.
Total or no, each?
No, total. Oh, per day. Sorry, per day.
No, it's not bad, though. That's, 90 per day. On its own, it's 160 or 80. It's super expensive. So, yeah, you're going to have to pick 3 days. I think for your kid, Animal Kingdom is a must. You can ride a lot of the things there. There's no hard rides there. I guess Magic Kingdom and Epcot. I would leave out MGM, which is one of my favorites, but for kids, you know, it's more for adults, MGM. That's where they have the tower that falls, in, you know, that old ride, the Haunted Hotel.
That's where they have like Jaws and Men in Black.
They have Jaws, yeah.
I don't know if they still have the...
I think they took out Jaws.
Back to the Future.
Oh, Back to the Future was fire.
Because I remember you could get in the car and then the car would fly.
Yeah. I don't know if they took it out. They've changed a lot of things. I know it sounds like a boomer, but I kind of like miss and have nostalgia for those old rides like Jaws. Did you ever ride the Haunted Elevator?
I did when I was before.
Right. And you never did again?
No.
That shit is fire, right? That fall is crazy. Because it's dark. You don't see... And you barely open the doors, right? Yeah. And you barely held. You have like a little bar in your lap. That's it. That ride is crazy. Do you know that ride, even though they have it in California too, the system that they have in the California one is different from the one in Orlando. And the Orlando one is the one that gives like the best experience.
I didn't know that.
That ride is very modern for like its day. I love the ride because the fall is like the climax to a whole buildup. If you remember, didn't we ride this shit together once? Like, you would go into the fucking thing and you go into the scary when you make the line. They just build it up and you get to like the rackety elevators and the workers. They look like this hotel workers from back in the day. Very scary. Man, like everything, just cinematic. That ride, I think, is probably the best Disney ride. For me, it's perfect. You know, Jaws, you know, is up there. But this one, anyways, yeah, so...
Just closed down in 2012.
Ah, fuck. Damn, a long time ago.
Yeah.
That ride was sick. You know, I love the ride in Islands of Adventure, the Jurassic Park one. That one is pretty fire, man. I wish I could have more money and live there near the parks. Chef Maurice, as always, thank you for joining us. It's been great. I'm happy they now picked up the trash. Is that correct? Can you confirm?
We can confirm.
No more smelly diapers.
No,
and I think the neighbor's going to be happy. You can leave them like a croqueta one of these days. I think
maybe
you know.
Maybe some of the Benjamin we can share.
Benjamin, maybe you can like, hey, look, I have some mimosas. You know, for a nice little Tuesday afternoon. And everybody that's watching, support us. You can leave critiques. You can leave comments. We thank you for joining us every week. I love you. Take care. Keep it Gucci. Keep it gangster. And as always, with you, Kiko Flow.